Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Ottawa Law Review podcast. My name is David Westcotts, and along with my colleagues, Dan Malone and Taylor Bain, we're very excited to have you with us today. Well over a year into the COVID-19 pandemic, technology has become more important to legal practice and legal scholarship than ever before. Today we are going to talk about one very exciting piece of legal technology in particular, artificial intelligence. AI, roughly defined as the simulation of human intelligence in machines that are programmed to think like humans and mimic their actions, is a very promising legal technology. In fact, if you have hired a lawyer, appeared in a courtroom, or watched a trial recently, there's a good chance that AI was involved in the process. As we speak, AI is being used by lawyers in virtually all common law jurisdictions to conduct research and prepare documents. Many lawyers have been eager to use AI for research and drafting, viewing it as an opportunity to save themselves and their clients time and money. Now, given that AI is most commonly used in legal research right now, this seems like a good place to start our discussion. So how does AI work in the context of legal research? Is AI alone being used to form legal opinions? Is there any human involvement at all in this research? To answer these questions, we had Dan sit down with Samarth Basin, the Chief Technology Officer of Alexi, to learn about how AI companies are using AI to support lawyers and their research.
All right, my name is Dan Malone. I'm an associate editor at the Ottawa Law Review, and I'm here with Samarth Basin, who is the Chief Technical Officer of Alexi. Samarth, can you just start by telling us, what is Alexi?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Dan. Great to be here. So Alexi is a legal AI startup. We provide answers to routine and complex legal questions in a document, in a 5 to 7 page document that we call a legal memo. Alexi's mission is to fully automate the production of legal memos using AI technologies. And we are well on our way to fully automate this.
That's interesting. Where did you get the idea? Like, how did this become your mission, I guess?
So a few years ago, my background is not in law. It's purely engineering. I've worked in R&D for the last over 10 years in scientific computing. I had an encounter with the legal system a few years ago. So I went and met a lawyer a few times, and I was surprised. I think that was my first time that I actually met a lawyer. I hadn't ever visited a courthouse before that. I had no idea what a courthouse was. So yeah, I just met a lawyer for my own issue, and I realized how complicated the system is, how expensive the system is, and how inaccessible it is, even for like a middle class citizen such as myself, earning a decent wage. So that really blew my mind, and I was like, this is, something needs to change here. Like this, so I first had the idea that why do I need to pay a lawyer to get all this information that's essentially public information? So I was like, I should put together like a website or, you know, like a Wikipedia kind of thing where I can just post about various questions and various sources of law. So I was thinking about that. That idea was brewing in my head, and then I met Mark, who's my co-founder, and he was also thinking about something similar, not exactly the same, but something similar, and we discussed at length about the idea of Alexi, and we decided, okay, let's just put together an application, a web application, see if lawyers even want to use this, and see if they would be willing to ask legal questions, because lawyers are trained to ask good legal questions. I think that's one of the hurdles that we had with going straight to consumer, that consumers usually come up with a description of the issue, but lawyers can distill it down to proper legal issues which is what we wanted to do. We wanted to answer, we wanted to provide answers to legal questions, properly distilled down legal questions. So we put together this application, and we found that, yes, lawyers are interested in asking questions through a web application. So we did that. And as we started working on that, we realized there's a lot of good data that we can collect here of questions and answers, like properly distilled down questions and very precise answers to these questions. And as we started to collect more and more of that data, we realized that there's very strong artificial intelligence that we can build on top of this. So that's how Alexi came into being. And this is the core technology that we're developing now to be able to provide answers to legal questions.
That's interesting. When you say properly distilled down legal questions, so I'm assuming this is somewhat different from, you know, a legal encyclopedia that says here's what the elements of negligence are. It's and you can kind of tailor it to specific facts, I'm understanding.
That's right. We can. So properly distilled down questions, I guess it just means legal issues, like things that are taught in law school, mm-hmm. to how to identify proper legal issues, legal principles from a given set of facts. So, yeah, so just that. And if you have the proper legal issues, we can also further process a legal question associated with specific legal facts.
That's okay. That's cool. So tell me more about the role of artificial intelligence in this process. It sounds like you didn't start with that as your idea, but it kind of built onto your original idea.
Yeah, I think the idea initially was let's just start with seeing if, like I said, let's just start with seeing if lawyers want to ask legal questions through a web application. Mm-hmm. Like getting lawyers to use technology is not always easy. Legal tech, anyways, has a bad reputation. So we were like, okay, let's just start like this and see how it goes. So that's right. We didn't initially start out with AI in mind. We just wanted to have a beta test of the product. Yeah, and as we started collecting more and more question and answers, we realized that this is really good text data to build NLP algorithms on top of it, so natural language processing, to build more AI technology on top of it. Because this is essentially what we're doing. We're teaching AI to provide answers to a legal question. So there are several existing AI technologies in the tech space or the NLP space. And there's been several advancements that have been made in this domain. And we are essentially extending those advancements in the NLP space and applying it to the legal space. Yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it does. I guess I'm not an expert on AI. This might be a silly question, but what is, you're talking about the NLP space? I'm not sure. Right. Could you explain a little what that is?
So NLP is a subdomain of AI. It's called natural language processing, and it deals with everything text. So text becomes the data for us, and we try to figure out patterns in text. We try to make mathematical representations of a sentence, of a passage, of a question.
That's really cool, especially applying it to law, which, you know, we like, I guess as lawyers, we like to think that the human element is irreplaceable, but what are some of the benefits, particularly for the client, in using AI software?
So I think what we found out with Alexi, with our customers who use Alexi, I think there are a few advantages of using Alexi. So one is lawyers don't always have the information at hand. So they might have some idea of the legal issue at hand. They might remember it from a case they worked on a few years ago or something they studied in law school. But from at the top of their mind, they don't always have the most accurate information given a legal question. So typically, they would like have some ballpark information, but if they wanted to find out what's the exact answer to this particular legal issue, or what is the current state of the law on this particular legal issue, they would have to go and do some research around it, which can take hours, if not days, to do that. So Alexi gives them an easy way to just simply type in a question in natural language as they would, like let's say in an email, and it takes like 2 minutes to do that. And we can provide them with a proper, accurate answer, with a precise answer within a couple of hours. So that's a huge benefit in knowing the current state of the law. Alexi is also my belief is that a machine can sift through thousands and millions of documents, whereas a human can only go through so many documents. So a machine has an advantage there that it can provide you with the most. You can be sure that you will get the most accurate answers because you've essentially gone through all the possible documents that can potentially answer the question.
You can do a lot more, a lot quicker, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess to follow up on that, it sounds like there's a lot that it can do, but what are some of the limitations of the technology as it currently stands? Like where could it go in the future?
Right. So the technology right now, I think is still very advanced considering the state of the art. We're still building it, making it better. So right now, Alexi answers just about any legal questions that's thrown at it. So whether it's a simple question or a much more complex questions, we provide the answer. So we have a team of human lawyers that work in collaboration with the AI. So let's say a really complicated question gets posed to Alexi, or it's worded in a very complicated way. Sometimes the technology doesn't do that well. So we get a first draft of the memo produced by AI, and sometimes we are surprised that, oh wow, this is not at par with what we were expecting. So then that memo or that first draft produced by the AI goes to the human lawyer to verify or to add to or to edit, just to keep the quality control. And then that memo goes to the client. The interesting thing is that memo also goes back into the system. So it goes back and the AI learns from that. So next time we get a similar question or a much more complicated question in the similar domain and similar realm, the AI does much better. Having said that, there are a lot of questions, let's say not as complicated, or let's say from a certain area of law, that that Alexi or that the AI does really, really well on. But even then, like, we always have a human lawyer verify the memo, just check it off. Our deep learning models, they provide a score for every memo that's produced. So if the score isn't good enough, then a human lawyer always verifies it. This is a quality control process that we've put in place, just so we don't, like, we want to ensure that we provide really high quality answers to our customers.
That's really interesting. That human element, you know, it's not removed entirely, but it's not, it's, you know, less, I guess, costly to the end client, in that they're, you know, the human is verifying the research, but they're not taking hours of their or billable hours to charge for it.
Yeah.
And I guess my next question is, particularly coming from a law student perspective, you know, these legal research memos are for many students, it's their gateway into the legal field. And I guess, what would you say to a law student that's worried that the work they've been learning to do might in the future become automated?
So we've been asked that question so many times, and the analogy we use is, I think in school you still learn how to do long division, and one still should learn how to do long division, but once you're out in the world, you're not expected to take a piece of paper and pen and start doing long division on that. You use a calculator. So we view Alexi the same way, that law student, I think, must learn how to do legal research, to go through case law document, to build up their knowledge. But there comes a point where technology can do this much better, save you time, get you started on your legal research. So we actually view it as a calculator for legal research.
That's a really interesting analogy. And yeah, I mean, I don't remember how to do long division, but I know how to use a calculator. So yeah, that's really interesting. I guess I'm trying to think I don't know. Is there anything else that you want to mention about Alexei in particular?
I think I've said pretty much all of it, but maybe I'll just say that we're on a long-term mission to transform the legal industry. We truly believe that we can do that with the core technology that we are building. So our technology provides good answers to precise answers to legal questions. It's also getting smarter by the day. It's learning to ask good questions from a given legal matter. So I think the core technology that we're building, it's going to be leveraged in many more ways. The product's going to expand.
That's interesting.
The product line is going to expand in many more ways that I guess than we can even imagine right now.
So do you see it going beyond this, this research area, and this research area where, you know, the human lawyer gives it a question and the human lawyer reviews what it spits out? Do you see it potentially in the future expanding to the point where maybe it's just a client asks the question and the client directly gets the answer?
I think that's still to be seen. We're not focused on that right now, but it's a possibility, but it's probably in way into the future right now. The product for that, like for a customer-facing or a client-facing product, is going to look very, very different than what Alexi is doing right now. But like I said, the core technology that we are building, I think it has a lot of potential in contributing to that client-centric product as well. Remains to be seen.
That's cool. Just this, and feel free to say you don't know, but do you see any other applications for AI in a legal context outside of Alexi's work where we might be able to see, you know, these advanced processing algorithms playing different roles in the legal process?
Oh, there's a ton already out there. So there are so many companies that are working on contract analysis, contract research. There are the Westlaws and LexisNexis, which you already know about. So they are also applying AI to their search platforms. So those are, I guess, and then there's BlueJay Legal, who's doing a lot of analytics work on case law. So it's already happening. I think AI is being applied to the law in so many different ways. Alexi, as far as I know, is probably the only question answer system right now, as opposed to database search tools or analytics tools or contract search tools. Various use cases already there.
Really? Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, database search is very much an AI type thing, you know? It's perhaps, well, and I guess it kind of has replaced the work humans used to do. Like, you used to have to open up a book and read the footnotes and or pay someone to do that for you. And I guess that's kind of something where it's already been adopted and we just don't think about it as much. So it'll be interesting to see if Alexi kind of plays a similar role in the future to what these database search engines do now.
I think that's how we see it as well. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say that's the end of my questions. So if there's nothing else you want to say, thank you very much for stopping by, Samarth. Again, this is Dan Malone, Associate Editor of the Ottawa Law Review, and I've been speaking with Samarth Basin, Chief Technological Officer of Alexi.
Anyone interested in Alexi or their services can visit their website at www.alexi.com, spelled alexsei.com. Alexi exists among us today as a viable alternative and support to a lawyer's legal research. Truly, the power of AI to connect people to justice is incredible at this stage of its development. Yet with all new technologies come lingering questions. Beyond the research and practice context, AI can be used in several other ways, not all of which are as helpful or ethical as research. This leaves questions about how AI use should be limited in the legal field, and perhaps more importantly, who is to blame if AI causes a direct harm. To explore these lingering issues with AI, Taylor sat down with Carney Shagel-Pfefferkorn, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Ottawa's Centre for Law and Technology.
Hi, Carney. Thanks so much for being here. My name is Taylor Bain. I'm an associate editor with the OLR. So today we're going to talk about AI and the law, and I know that that is one aspect of your research that you've been involved in. So could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure, with pleasure, and thank you for inviting me today. My name is Carney Shagel-Pfefferkorn. I'm a postdoc fellow at the University of Ottawa, and indeed my research deals with AI and the law, and specifically with AI and legal liability. But I'm also a little bit involved in the legal tech industry, and I'm very interested in many other aspects of law and AI.
I'd like to first talk about the attitudes towards AI that you see. I know that there's this contrast between a resistance to AI as well as a tech can solve everything kind of outlook. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, sure, with pleasure. I'll just say that, almost all legal scholarly and talks about AI, they start with a basic disclaimer, maybe, that AI is a very broad concept that no one has been able to define. It could be looked as autonomous system, but then autonomy in itself has many meanings. So when we talk about AI today, we'll do it very broadly, and mainly I'll speak about systems that can learn on their own, as opposed to, rule-based algorithms that are told, if something happens, do this. It could be very complex and rely on volumes of data, but still its outcomes are predictable. Then AI is considered to be these systems that learn on themselves and thus yield less foreseeable or predictable outcomes. And I'll answer your questions, but that just to say that AI and the law, it could roughly be divided into two main, sectors. One is AI in the legal industry, AI is assisting or replacing lawyers. There are many sorts of AI applications or solutions for lawyers. There's the famous IBM system called Ross, which is a virtual attorney who can do legal research. There are other applications that rely on big data that have analyzed court decisions and can try to predict outcomes of court decisions based on various parameters, types of arguments, the judges. It could also tell you, the type of legal arguments that might work well in these types of cases. or other legal tech solutions that help lawyers, you know. There is a famous LaTeX company that has already scanned numerous contracts and can therefore, when you as an attorney or an end user upload a contract, it tells you whether specific sections are usual, not usual, you should pay attention to. So there are many types of solutions for the legal industry as lawyers. And on the other hand, there's the AI in the service of the judicial system or the law enforcement system. Face recognition systems can help detect suspects later in court. There are different AI systems, forensic systems that could assist, you know, the parties or the judge to say whether a certain suspect is indeed the defendant based on his DNA or gait analysis or other type of parameters, and do it in a different way than other, you know, DNA has been, you know, it's been around for years, but to do it with AI that can compare and match between large databases. And there's also, in the US, AI is used in the sentencing itself, or more accurately, when deciding whether a defendant or a criminal is dangerous or not, likely to flee the parole or not. So to sum it up, I think AI is divided into these sectors, and the question of accepting it or being afraid of it, it depends on the sector. But common to them both, as you said, there are different ways to view it. I would even say there are three ways to view it. One is, it's a great thing. You know, AI, because it relies on so much data and learns on its own, we can already see that it's doing things that human cannot do. And the potential is immense, whether in the legal sector or other, transportation, medical. So one approach would be to say, yes, it's wonderful, let's embrace it. On the other end of the spectrum is, this is dangerous for several reasons. I would love to elaborate it if we have time. Dangerous, we should worry about these systems. We should not have humans being replaced by systems. And there's also the middle way, which is, you know, it's dangerous, but the world is going there. I can tell from personal experience when I sat with law firms regarding, you know, simple legal tech solutions, but ones that assist attorneys or even replace them, there were those who say, wait, you want to replace us lawyers? What, you want to, you know, take our jobs? And there were those who said, you know what, we see it's happening. So we know, I mean, we can stay behind and like put our hands in the sand and not accept it, or we can say this is happening, we should adjust and see how we can transform the legal profession, similar in the sense to how accountants maybe transformed their profession when Excel sheets appear. Excel sheets is, you know, a sophisticated tool that helps accountants, you know, in a way it took some part of their job, but they found other more creative things to invest more of their time, similar to how probably lawyers will. And I have much more to say, but I don't know if you want to direct me, if you want me to talk about, you know, the advantages and disadvantages and as a result, why is AI perceived as dangerous or as of great potential? Do you want to move on to other things, whatever you want to?
No, that's all great. I've never heard that analogy of the accountants and spreadsheets with how the legal profession can embrace technology and AI. So I think that's a great way to put it, as opposed to AI will take our jobs and leave us with nothing. So that's a great kind of way to look at that. I would love to hear more on the issues that you see arising with AI. I know you mentioned some dangers that can arise. So I think that would be really important to discuss, as well as the benefits, of course, wherever you see fit.
Sure, great. So I'll start with the benefits. I don't know if they're shorter, but you know, I think they're maybe more obvious. So there are things that AI systems can do that humans simply cannot do. For instance, if you have a suspect fleeing around the world, humans, you know, they don't have the ability that AI systems does. By the way, it's AI and the learning capabilities, but also it's combined with the fact that AI relies on big data. So it's the combination of big data and the learning capabilities that allows these systems to do things that were, you know, belong to science fiction not long ago. So the advantages are they can do things human cannot do. or the things that they do that human can do, such as driving or such as legal research, they could be more efficient because, you know, it takes them split seconds to do things that could take us days or months to do. And they can also be better, not in everything, even in the medical field, which is considered one of the greatest potential of AI systems. There are already notorious failures of AI systems where you see that physicians do it better and AI reached bad outcomes, which are absurd. But still, there are also fields, and you know that the more time goes by, then these systems are improved. We already see it that they can reach better results. So, with that in mind, we know that for humanity's sake, at least in certain sectors or certain activities, we want the AI systems. They do better. They can save lives on the road or in hospitals. And they could also, if we go back to the legal sector, they could also reach more just decisions. In the future, if you can see that they are better than judges in, you know, determining whether the defendant is indeed guilty or not, they could free innocent people or lock guilty people better. It's something that has its moral dilemmas. I'll touch upon it in a second, but it's something that has great potential. On the other hand, there are a few concerns or challenges with respect to AI systems. And one is, the most severe one, we've already talked about it, it replaces humans, you know, on everything that comes with it. So there is the one aspect of it, you know, certain types of jobs might disappear. Professional drivers, for example, or in the legal profession, very technical things. Lawyers and in certain countries and for certain documents have to attest the signature of a signee, of someone who writes an affidavit. Technology can replace that. Not even AI, even more simple technology. And AI can replace even more and more tasks. So there is this debate, especially in the legal community of lawyers, you know, is it going to replace us? And by the way, I think the answer is no. It will not replace lawyers or judges, at least not for a very long time, because as advanced as these systems are, and they are advanced, they can not only execute technical tasks, but you already see, there are famous examples of the AI system that won Jeopardy. I mean, the AI systems can be creative, and they can do things that, you know, do not require very specific instructions. It's true. But still, you know, replacing a lawyer's creativity or a judge's discretion, we believe these are things that, if they are possible, they will take a lot of time. But it's a worry, you know, in the job market. And also another worry in that context of having AI replace humans is that the specialty or the professionalism of professionals will disappear, you know, because the more tasks are relinquished to these systems, then, you know, there will be less and less people who know how to do it as well. And there is also, by the way, an interesting argument that, AI systems, how do they work? They make predictions based on data sets they have trained on. And then the more they are experienced, then the past cases they've worked on are fed, you know, there's like a feedback loop fed back into the system, and then they learn based on what they've already decided, and then it goes on. And, you know, if humans lose these abilities or the professionalism because, you know, they have relinquished different tasks to machines or to systems, then there's a very interesting argument saying that, in the end, the systems would improve to a certain point. But then, because they are only fed by information they provide themselves and humans will not be so much involved, they cannot improve further. So this is one concern, and you know, a general one, but an interesting one. A more maybe, I don't know if the right word is down to earth, but like upright or like in your face concern has to do with the decisions that these systems make and the nature of them. First of all, when AI systems make decisions, often they are not transparent and not explainable. What do I mean by that? There is information fed into the AI systems. It includes the data sets they've trained on and additional data they picked on the way while they are operating. And it includes a set of instructions given to them during the training process. But the data and the process, often it's proprietary. You do not know what went into the system. You only see what came out. And when it's a person making the decision, a judge or a lawyer deciding whether, you know, to prosecute or not, even if they, you know, the cognitive process too is, you know, it's mysterious. You cannot always say why you did that instead of that, but still you can reason your decisions. And AI systems, there are some techniques to try to overcome it, but in general, they're considered a black box. You know what comes in, you know what comes out, you don't know what happened in between. And why is it problematic? It's problematic for various reasons. And one, the lack of transparency, the lack of, it prevents public oversight. And then if there's something wrong in the system, for instance, it's biased, then it would take a lot of time till you would know it. Let's say, I don't know, assume that there's, you know, there's, I was saying before, in the US, they are using algorithms to assist judges determining parole terms. Let's say that for some reason, no one knew about it, no one intended it, but for some reason, because of the data the algorithm trained on, It turns out that it has some sort of bias against redhead people. I don't know if I said it correctly.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. For some reason, who knows why? Maybe it's maybe there is something about redhead people. Maybe there's just the sample of data that was used. There are many redhead people who did X and not Y, and then it's possible that no one will ever know about it. And they will be discriminated against or in favor of them. But the fact that the systems are not transparent cannot explain why they decided as they did and rely on the data so much. It gives the data so much importance and significance. And many times, obviously all the firms working on AI, whether because they're good people or because of PR considerations, they don't want to be discriminatory. They want their systems to, you know, to reach fair decisions. But technically, it turns out that even if you try, there are many things you don't necessarily think of in advance. It's discovered only later. And the opaque nature of AI systems make it difficult to discover mistakes, to discover biases. So that's one worry. There are other types of worries. There's of course, the issue of privacy, because, you know, to have these capabilities and to reach supposedly better decisions, AI systems need to rely on big data, which is collected on each and every one of us all of the time, including aspects we would not even know we're being, you know, surveilled or followed. And then, you know, if we're talking about the judicial system, even if like a forensics AI system collects DNA information, it can use this DNA information not only for the purposes that maybe we consented to or the government said we should be able to collect information on. There's the potential of using these data sets for other purposes, which could have like many implications because AI systems, you know, these systems are like they proliferate. They control more and more aspects of their lives, of our lives. Sorry, and they can, in certain cases, they can also communicate with each other, feed information to each other. Which means, I think we're facing a world where information about us and all different aspects could be linked to one another, in a sense that if a system collected, maybe even with my consent, information on my medical history or DNA, it could be later used in my favor or against me, you know, by insurance companies, by my bank who sees maybe, I don't know, heaven forbids I have a disease and then I'm a greater risk. So these things, the fact that they are connected and collect so much information, of course, they involve much privacy concern. I'll talk about two more things. Another aspect is the aspect of ethical liability. If something goes wrong, who's at fault? you know, if a lawyer gave me a bad advice, then, you know, I don't know, it's still difficult to sue, but under certain circumstances, you can sue the lawyer for the damages they caused. What happens if it's, you know, if it's Ross or a virtual system? Do I sue the law firm that used it? Do I sue the company that manufactured it? Many times, if not one company, the AI systems are patches on another system. Maybe it's the technology itself. You know, it's not an Excel sheet. It's not a calculator anymore. It's something that has a degree of autonomy, is not foreseeable. So maybe we should look at the behavior of the technology itself when we're thinking about the liability. I think it's more prominent in the context of transportation, you know, autonomous vehicles. They have already been accidents with autonomous vehicles. Who do we sue? I mean, the car decided to go that way. So how do I know? Is it the driver's fault? Maybe there was no driver. The car owner, the car manufacturer, the AI system manufacturer. So a lot of issues concerning liability, which I think could be a topic of a different podcast. And lastly, and I think I'll end with that concern because I think it's the most, raises most ethical considerations. You know, let's say we have the worry that you know, as I said, maybe AI systems, they could cause damage. They're not transparent. So how can we tell if they're making a mistake? Of course, these are related scenarios where they're not doing their job well. But even let's assume that we know that AI systems do much better than humans in all the tests we want to give. Still, there is the ethical considerations. Do we want machines, systems, to be the ones that decide? You know, if it's an issue of whether to write this paragraph or not in a contract, I don't care. But if it's determining whether a defendant is guilty or not, or also in the context of autonomous weapon, whether to shoot someone or not, these questions, many say that, you know, they require a human in the loop. So many things to think about, many concerns or challenges.
Yes, definitely. I see a kind of a theme of humanism that arises throughout those issues and what it actually means to hand over decisions to non-humans, which is a big, big question in the discussion on AI and how far it can go. So considering that, what do you see as the future of AI? What do you predict for AI in its place in the future in the legal profession?
It's a great question. I think that the easy part of it would be that some systems will merely assist humans. And then many of the considerations I've raised, they still exist because, you know, humans will probably be inclined to rely on them because they know that these systems are supposed to work better. So why not rely on them? What happens if I don't rely on them? Maybe I'm, you know, I could be sued or I'm wrong or I'm causing damage because I'm making up my own mind, whereas the system is supposed to be better than my own mind. But as long as these systems only assist humans, I think most of the concerns we've raised are less problematic because still there's a human in the loop. It can operate discretion. There's still, you know, an accountable entity. The major question is what happened if they're going to replace humans. And then again, if it's a matter of technical tests, then it's not a problem. You know, replacing lawyers and, you know, drafting an agreement instead of having the lawyers do it. It is, as we've talked about, the accountants. And maybe it's a bad example because here too, I'm sure lawyers would still, the humans would still go over the contract to make sure it's right. But still, even for tests where the system would completely replace humans, the main question, it pertains to these issues where these are questions of discretion, of judgment that have like more implications. And I think then two things I want to say. First of all, this is the main challenge because, and I'm not sure where I stand, because on the one hand, if these technologies are better, they can save lives, they can make better decisions whether a person is guilty or not, then yes, I want them to do it because it could save, you know, innocent people from going to jail and vice versa. Then the utility from doing it, it's great. So I want, I, I would like these systems to be in charge. But then again, as we've said before, there is the fear of all these concerns that they will not that be transparent, could be biased, et cetera, which could be minimized, but not completely
like removed.
That's completely blocked altogether. Yeah, yes. Not removed altogether. And then I think it's an ethical question we should ask ourselves. There's no right answer. What price are we willing to pay? You know, in different kind of sectors, the answer is not a one size fit all. It could be different in the transportation sector, different in the autonomous weapons sector, different in the legal sector. What price are we willing to pay to reach better results? The encouragement is that as of now, the laws or legislation, you know, by their nature, they are slower than technology. So they do not yet fit the different types of dilemmas we're facing. In the context of liability, as I've said before, you know, many different countries are now trying to legislate new laws that says, okay, how do we deal with those systems that cause damage? And they're not human, but they're no longer a machine or a tool. So there are many propositions, and it's going that way. So it's true for liability, it's true for privacy, accountability. So the good news is that I think that soon we will have more robust guidelines and directions on how to minimize the concerns and risks we've talked about. There's already much intellectual work in the field of how to create responsible AI. And it has to do with two main things. One more theoretical, which is people are now acknowledging that when designing systems, you have to have both data scientists and lawyer early in the process working together, rather than designing a system, which is great, but then after it's already launched, you discover, oh, what about the major privacy issues we didn't think of? So, you know, have this brainstorming at an early stage with as many relevant parties as possible to try to think about the problems in advance. You know, and by the way, if you go back to the legal professions, there are now many courses being offered that are joint to lawyers and data scientists, or ethical courses to computer engineers. So this is one direction that the academia and the industry are definitely adopting. And of course, there are many technical solutions, you know, to try and minimize the concerns. And if we talk about privacy, you should ask for, you know, for this, there are already different rules and legislation in different countries. Of course, in Canada and the EU. And you know, you need to achieve very specific consent and allow individuals the opportunity to opt out. But also with respect to what we also said about the worry that these systems will make decisions that are biased or unfair. There are many different type of technical solutions, such as auditing these systems, not only when you develop them, but also after they go into the market. There are solutions of tinkering. You know, these systems are black boxes. You don't know what will happen. Okay, so once it's launched, you can just make experiments and see how they react. You know, of course, you will not catch all the subsets of potential scenarios, but you can try to see that it's functioning. And I assume, and it's already in the process, that national legislations will, depending on the sector, depending on the risk of the system, depending on different considerations, will require different types of technical measures to minimize the risks.
That's great. Yes, of course. It's quite a balance that we need to figure out, and it comes from so many different sectors needing to address it. So thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom today on AI, and we can't wait to see what else you do and what else we can see you doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. I would just say, if anyone is interested in further reading, there's a new book just released, AI and Law in Canada, by Florian Martin-Vertu and Teresa Scassa. And it actually maps AI and the intersection of it with different fields of the law, including, you know, legal tech and AI in the judicial system. So for further reading, it's a great source.
there you have it. AI isn't quite perfect just yet, and the relationship between AI, humans, and liability has yet to be fully made out. What we do know, however, is that AI is here, it is being used, and it likely isn't going anywhere anytime soon. We have already seen incredible applications of AI from the team at Alexi, for example, but in a field of legal tech where the limits are tested each and every day, only time will tell how the relationship between the law, AI, lawyers, and the public will develop. The Ottawa Law Review would like to thank Samarth Bazin and Carney Shagel Pfefferkorn for joining us today. The Ottawa Law Review does not necessarily endorse the work or products of our guests. A special thank you to Dan Malone and Taylor Bain for conducting this episode's interviews, and a very special thank you to Ryan Pistorius for his guidance and support throughout the development of this episode. The Ottawa Law Review is a bilingual academic journal published biannually by the students of the Common Law section under the supervision of a faculty advisor. Since its foundation in 1966, the Ottawa Law Review has been devoted to excellence in legal scholarship and to the promotion of a diversity of opinion on current legal issues. The Ottawa Law Review is open access and can be accessed anytime at rdo-olr.org. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.